From Spark and Anvil and Gambit Tales, this is Queen Vesper, in Chapter 1 of the Gambit Tales cast. This drama uses an AI-generated voice, voiced via Gemini 2.5.
The thing you have to understand about Vesper, before anything else about her, is that she does not like the word queen. She will use it when the occasion requires it. She has been asked many times to use it for the sake of formality. There are certain royal ceremonies in which not using it would constitute an actual diplomatic offense. But if you watch her closely during any conversation that lasts longer than 3 sentences, you'll notice that she finds a way to refer to herself as something else. Ranger, messenger, the one who arrives. She prefers verbs to titles, generally, and she prefers titles that describe what a person does to titles that describe what a person sits on. The title queen makes her feel like she should be sitting somewhere indoors. She has never been particularly good at sitting indoors. You will see her, most often, on a road. She wears a heavy traveling cloak, warm amber when she serves the Whiteboard Kingdom, cool charcoal when she serves the Blackboard Kingdom, and a pair of boots so well walked that the soles can tell you which roads have ice and which have only mud. She walks fast. She skis when there is snow on the ground. Occasionally she runs, although she finds running undignified and only does it when geography insists. She arrives at places before anyone particularly expects her to, and she tends to leave again before anyone has finished thanking her for arriving. This is the story of how she became the queen of both kingdoms at the same time, although she will tell you, if you ask, that it is really a story about a long winter and 2 letters that got mixed up at the post office in Merrimile. It happened the winter she was 19, before her cloak was warm amber, before anyone had thought to call her queen. Her name was Vesper then, too. She had always been Vesper. But no one announced it on her arrival anywhere. People just yelled it out the window when they saw her coming. She was a ranger messenger in the eastern province of the Whiteboard Kingdom, which meant she carried letters between border outposts and the capital across a great many miles of difficult country. She walked, she skied. Her boots were already on their second pair by then, both held together with knots she had tied herself by lamplight. The winter was unusually bad that year. The slow lake froze over earlier than anyone could remember. The roads filled with snow up to a tall person's knees in the high passes. The post office was frankly doing its best, but the whole system depended on rangers like Vesper to fill in the gaps when a sledge couldn't get through, and the regular mail runners had to turn back. On the second coldest day of that winter, 2 urgent letters arrived at the post office in the small town of Merrimile, where Vesper happened to be drinking tea by the wood stove and arguing under her breath with her boots. The first letter was addressed, "Urgent, to His Majesty King Pumble. The eastern outpost is overrun. We need reinforcement at the river crossing immediately." The second letter was addressed, "Urgent, to His Majesty King Sable. Our eastern outpost is overrun. We need reinforcement at the river crossing immediately."
You may already see the problem. The kings were cousins. They still are. They will always be. They led opposing kingdoms, Pumble the Whiteboard Kingdom, Sable the Blackboard Kingdom, which meant their armies were, technically and legally, enemies. Their eastern river crossings were on opposite sides of the same river. The same river. 2 outposts, 2 enemies, 1 winter, 1 ranger. Both letters needed to arrive within 12 hours of being written, or the strategic situation would tilt, and the river crossing would shift to whichever side the messages happened to reach first. The river crossing strategist who had drafted them, a tactician named Strait, who would later be promoted and then immediately retire because of this exact night, had not coordinated with anyone on the timing. She had simply assumed that the post office would handle the delivery question on its end. She had not realized that the 2 king's couriers were, in practical fact, the same courier. Vesper finished her tea in 2 careful sips. She read both letters. She looked at her boots, considering the distances they were about to be asked to cover. She said 1 word out loud to the postmistress. The word was, "Right." Then she did 3 things in order, very quickly. First, she put on every coat she owned, which was 2 coats stacked 1 over the other for double warmth. Second, she stole a horse from the postmistress's neighbor. She would later send a very polite written letter of apology, and the horse's owner would later be paid back with interest, plus a basket of apples. But at the time, the stealing was the point, and the apology would have to wait until after the river crossing held. Third, she chose a route that no sensible courier in possession of a map would have chosen on the same day. The two outposts were 30 miles apart by any reasonable measure. Standard courier routes followed the safe roads, which followed the long curve of the slow lake around its southern shore. Standard routes would have taken 16 hours to reach one outpost and 24 hours to reach the other, meaning, in cold practical terms, that one king would get his message and the other would not, and one army would be reinforced and the other would be lost, and the river crossing would tilt in favor of whichever kingdom happened to be reached first.
Vesper looked at the map for a long, thoughtful moment. She did not follow the curve. She went across, straight over the frozen slow lake at its narrowest point, then diagonal across the open plain to the north of the lake, then straight up along the frozen river ice to the first outpost. Three movements, one trip, both outposts. She arrived at King Pumble's outpost at dawn, with frost in her eyebrows. She handed over the first letter without dismounting. She did not wait for thanks. She turned the horse and went diagonally back across the open plain, at a different angle this time, and arrived at King Sable's outpost 3 hours later. She handed over the second letter. She did not wait for thanks at the second outpost either. Both kings sent reinforcements at the same hour, although neither knew the other was doing it. The river crossing tilted neither way that winter. Both outposts held through the spring thaw. The winter eventually ended, the way winters do. The horse, which was a remarkable horse, was returned to its owner 2 weeks later with a long written apology and the promised basket of apples. That following spring, when both kings independently asked who had carried the letters that had held the crossing, the postmistress at Merrow Mile gave the same answer to both messengers who came asking. The ranger messenger, the one who walks all routes, the one who arrives first. Both kings wrote to her, independently, almost identically. They both wanted her to come and serve at the capital. Pumble wanted her in the Whiteboard Palace. Sable wanted her in the Blackboard Palace. Both letters were polite. Both letters made it clear that the position was an honor. She wrote back to both kings. Her letters were also almost identical to each other. They said, "Thank you. I do not wish to live at a palace. If you need me, I will come. I will move in any direction. I will arrive first. But I would rather stay near a road." There followed a long winter of letters and a longer spring of quiet diplomatic negotiation. The two kings, who were cousins, eventually agreed, after careful adjustments to two separate sets of court protocols, and after considerable consultation with both sets of legal advisors, that Vesper would serve both kingdoms in a single arrangement. She would not be claimed by either kingdom. She would not be required to swear loyalty to either board. She would be the queen of neither and the queen of both, which is to say, she would appear when she was needed, on whichever side, and she would not be a question of loyalty so much as a question of geography. This arrangement is, technically speaking, against the rules of chess. Chess says there is a white queen and a black queen, and the two are separate pieces serving separate armies. But Vesper's deal is older than the formal rules of chess, and the rulebook has decided, with diplomatic tact, not to argue about it. She is in fact one archetype with two cloaks, warm amber when she serves the whiteboard kingdom, cool charcoal when she serves the blackboard kingdom. Same Vesper, same boots, different cloak. When Captain Castle came, in time, to collect cast members for his children's academy, he wrote to Vesper at the post office where she still received her mail. The letter was 3 sentences long. The reply was 1 sentence. "I'll be there before the next sentence finishes." She was. Castle later said this was, frankly, more efficient than the alternative of introducing himself in person.
"She visits the academy whenever she is needed, and not a single moment before. She does not have a permanent seat in the building. Captain Castle offered her one, in writing, and she wrote back politely declining. I don't sit," she had added at the bottom of the letter. "Thank you, though." When she arrives at the academy, she does so in 3 movements. Across the courtyard, diagonally up the stairs, straight into whichever room the children happen to be in that afternoon. The children, by now, know her by the sound of her boots on the stone, before they have actually seen her cloak come through the door. When she teaches, she does not explain, she demonstrates. On her very first visit, she walked to the demonstration board, looked at the position Captain Castle had set up,
a white king in serious trouble in the corner of the board, no defenders anywhere nearby, and asked the children directly, "Where is the king in danger?" A boy in the back said H1. Where would help him? The boy considered the board for a long moment. E4? Or maybe H4? From where? From anywhere along those squares. Vesper moved her queen from A1 to the defending diagonal that covered H1 in a single uninterrupted motion. The king was suddenly safe. The whole defensive geometry had rearranged itself in one move.
"Any direction," she said. "Any distance. First to arrive. That is the whole job." The children watched her cloak, warm amber that day, settle back into its traveling folds as she stepped away from the board. Captain Castle, watching from the side of the room with his hands behind his back, looked extremely pleased and tried, with limited success, not to show it. She still does not like the word queen. If you ask her what she actually is, when the conversation is private and nobody is taking notes, she will say, "I'm the one who arrives. That's the whole job." And then she will look at her boots, which are now in their fourth pair, and she will go. Sometimes when a class has ended and Vesper is on her way out, a child will catch up to her in the long corridor and ask the question that lies under most of the questions about her. "What's it like to be the strongest piece on the board?" Vesper will stop walking. She will consider, briefly, whether to answer the question that was asked or the question that lies beneath it. She has been asked this question enough times to know they are not always the same question. She will say, after a measured pause, "It's like being the one who was asked. That's the part nobody tells you in advance. The strongest piece is the most asked. You arrive first because you can, yes, but you arrive first because someone needs you to. Don't watch me, watch the king. He's the one in trouble. I'm just the one who got the letter." Then she will tighten her cloak across her shoulders against the corridor draft. She will nod at the child once. She will go diagonally down the corridor, then straight out the door, then across the corridor at her usual fast walk, on to whatever road needs her next.
You've been listening to a Spark and Anvil chapter, written by the Spark and Anvil writing team for ages 9 to 14. Spark and Anvil is a 501c3 public charity. Apps stay free forever. Curriculum aligned to Queen Vesper. Released under Creative Commons BY-NC-SA 4.0 for educational reuse. Visit Spark and Anvil for the full transcript.